Sharpeville is what we call a township, a settlement, a little bit south of Johannesburg. And it was at that time, and still is predominantly, a residential area of black people. And it happened that at that time in our history, 52 years ago now, there was a campaign being run by the liberation movements, the ANC, the African National Congress, but also the Pan-Africanist Congress. The campaign was against the carrying of passes. And in those days, one of the requirements of apartheid legislation was that black people had to carry a sort of internal passport if they wanted to move around different parts of the country or leave the rural areas to come and work in the cities and so on. And this was a very powerful means of control of the movement of black people. And, of course, they resisted against that as much as they could. And in the late 1950s and through into the early 60s, there were a number of campaigns against the passes and against the law underlying the carrying of passes. One such campaign was scheduled for March 1960, and a group of people, a large crowd of people, many thousands, gathered outside the police station at Sharpeville, intending to hand in their passes and volunteer to be arrested, because any black person that abandoned their pass was liable to be arrested. So it was a symbolic kind of passive resistance demonstration. Unfortunately, there are conflicting reports, but the essence of it was that at a certain point, the police officers, who were quite edgy, opened fire on the crowd, and 69 people were killed. Many, many more were injured. A lot of those people, it was subsequently found, had been shot in the back. In other words, they were already running away, and the police appeared to have continued shooting. Up to that point, it was the single worst massacre of civilians during the whole apartheid struggle. And it reverberated around the world in various ways. It led quite quickly to the decision on the part of the liberation movements to take up an armed struggle against apartheid. And of course, it also led to a great crackdown by the apartheid government against the liberation movements.
The Catholic Church was, in fact, in the forefront during those terrible years, raising its voice against discrimination and trying to uphold justice in South Africa. Today, in your office, in your involvement with the Catholic bishops, do you still deal with issues that are connected to racial discrimination?
Yes, we certainly do. And I think we can talk about it in two respects. There are still very deep-seated racist attitudes in South Africa. Many, many white people have yet to come to terms with the fact that we are now nearly 18 years after our first democratic election, 18 years after a predominantly black government. For many whites, this is still something that they don't want to get used to, and this gives rise to criticisms of the government, which are based on racist attitudes, the idea that a black government is incapable of, you know, running a country and so on. Unfortunately, the government itself has been, shall we say, guilty of a certain level of maladministration and corruption and so on, which tends to give a lot of ammunition to the racists. And so that's one aspect of the church's task, to try to educate people in that respect, that people are not competent or incompetent according to their race, but perhaps according to their experience, their qualifications, their educational background, and so on. From the other direction, there are hints every now and then of what some people might refer to as a kind of counter-racism, the policy of affirmative action that has been in place for many years now since the black government came into power, is regarded by some people as racist because it makes use of racial categories in order, for example, to qualify people for certain jobs and positions and university places and that sort of thing. Government says that this is an attempt to redress the balance. We had well over 100 years of institutionalized racism in our legal system, and before that, another 200 years of, you might say, colonial racial discrimination. Can't undo that overnight. And government says what we are trying to do now through our affirmative action program is precisely to try to undo some of the damage, to try to favor those who were for so many generations disadvantaged in the past. I think that the church here broadly supports that policy, but we are also critical where necessary, and if we feel that it's being exceeded or if we feel that the policy is being applied in a way which really unfairly discriminates against people who are not black, then we say so.
You speak of a deep-seated racism that still exists in South Africa, but actually racial and ethnic discrimination occur around the world and hinder the progress of millions of people. Can you think of any other situation, in your opinion, that should be highlighted?
Well, I think probably wherever we look in the world, we can find examples of racism and racial discrimination and kind of racial thinking. I was just reading in the document issued by the Pontifical Justice and Peace Commission back in 1988, where they say that racism is a wound in humanity's side that mysteriously remains open. And I thought that was a very good way of describing it. Maybe we don't exactly understand why this phenomenon continues to bedevil us. It's a wound that mysteriously remains open. But if we look in the Middle East, we can see examples of it. If we look, for example, elsewhere in Africa, in the newest nation, South Sudan, as it struggles to get to its feet, we find what might be called tribalism or ethnic divides, but in a certain sense, they're also racially based. People are finding reasons to discriminate against each other, even to the point, unfortunately, of killing each other, based on the characteristics of language and origin, geographical origin, tribe, etc. So all over the place, I think it's a problem. In the United States, again, we've seen some studies recently that show how in the economic downturn, African Americans were predominantly affected or worst affected. So, yes, South Africa perhaps has, has certainly made very great strides. As I said, it's still a problem which affects us and which has to be addressed. But we shouldn't think that it was only in the systematized apartheid era that racism existed. It exists in a less systematic way, I suppose, in a less legalized way in countries all over the world.
Mike, as a South African, how do you feel about this International Day Against Racism, which is a reminder of a terrible recent history that your country has undergone?
I think that these days always serve a useful purpose if they are, you know, properly publicized and if people understand why we are commemorating or celebrating the particular thing. In South Africa, it's a public holiday. In direct commemoration of the Sharpeville massacre. It has been a public holiday since 1995. Unfortunately, sometimes when these days are made holidays, people treat them as holidays, and it's an excuse just to not go to work, sleep late, do a bit of shopping, go to the beach or whatever. So I'm not sure that the real impact or the real sort of educational opportunities that come with these days are always correctly taken up. But we will have various commemorative events on Wednesday all over the country. The politicians of the different parties will all use the day as an opportunity to promote their own ideologies and their own party policies, etc. What impact it has in the long run, I really don't know. And I think in South Africa's particular case, quite ironically, we see this as Sharpeville Day. And its formal title here is Human Rights Day. We don't necessarily see it very much in international terms as an international day against racial discrimination. As I say, that's perhaps a little bit ironic.
But it is important to the rest of the world, and that makes it very significant, I think.
Certainly it is, yes, it is. And if the really acute kind of manifestation of racism that occurred at Sharpeville 52 years ago can help other people around the world to see that kind of massacre of 69 people is, in a certain sense, the ultimate end of racial thinking and racialized government. If it can help people to come to that realization, then hopefully it's a message that will serve some purpose all over the world.
Maybe it's also an occasion to tell people in other parts of the world how how much better it is to live in a society that fights racism. How much nicer it is in South Africa now for everyone.
That's very true. And in particular, obviously, young people and children who are now growing up without a personal memory of the days of racial discrimination. We have an expression in South Africa, the born frees. People who were born after 1994, perhaps after 1990, in fact, when Nelson Mandela was released from prison and the liberation movements were unbanned, that generation, which is now entering its early 20s, the born frees, have not known institutionalized, systematized discrimination. And one can see what a difference it makes. One can see how easily younger people are mixing with each other, learning each other's customs and cultures, to some extent learning each other's languages and so on. Interracial couples now, interracial marriage and so on, is no longer seen as anything unusual, taken for granted. And our suburbs are becoming mixed. You don't raise an eyebrow anymore when a family of a different skin color moves into the house next door. It is, as you say, much, much better. The only question is, why did it take us so long to realize that?
Thank you very, very much. Mike, is there anything else you'd like to say?
I hope that whoever has listeners all over the world will spare a thought for the efforts that we are making here in South Africa. We have a long way to go, I think, as everybody knows, before we can claim that we've won the battle against racism. But we'll carry on.